Try 4 weeks of The Spectator absolutely free. And, for this month only, you'll receive a Spectator wireless phone charger. Go to www.spectator.co.uk/charger.
Welcome to Coffeehouse Shots for Spectator's Daily Politics Podcast. Boris Johnson has just emerged from Prime Minister's questions when he was challenged on what exactly happened in British care homes. Here is what Keir Starmer asked him.
Mr. Speaker, in his speech on Sunday, the Prime Minister said that we need to rapidly reverse the awful epidemic in our care homes. But earlier this year, and until the 12th of March, the government's own official advice was, and I'm quoting from it, it remains very unlikely that people receiving care in a care home will become infected. Yesterday's ONS figures showed that at least 40% of all deaths from COVID-19 were in care homes. Does the Prime Minister accept that the government was too slow to protect people in care homes?
Prime Minister.
No, Mr. Speaker, it wasn't true that the advice said that. And actually, we brought the lockdown in care homes ahead of the general lockdown.
I'm Fraser Nelson, and I'm joined by James Forsyth and Katie Bowles. Now, James, Boris, we heard him there simply denying that such advice was ever issued to care homes. Did he misspeak?
I think, to be kind, he misspoke. The problem for Boris Johnson is that the government guidance said that people in being cared for in either a care home or in the community were highly unlikely to get coronavirus. And this advice was not withdrawn or updated until mid-March. And I think that is the issue. I think the government has a strategic dilemma here, which is it is now quite clear that some specific mistakes have been made. For example, the decision not to ramp up testing earlier in the crisis, and also the way in which care homes are treated, the discharge of patients from hospitals into care homes. It seems hard to believe that that hasn't at least in some way contributed to the appalling number of deaths in care homes. And I think the question for the government is, when does it say, look, mistakes were made, and these specific mistakes were made, and then attempt to explain how that happened? Or how much does it stick to this line of trying to basically say, look, at the end of this crisis we'll learn lessons, and I'm sure that mistakes have been made, but we're not conceding any specific mistakes now? I think this is 2 weeks in a row at PMQs where being confronted with the obvious has caused Boris Johnson a problem. Last week it was his answer on why testing and tracing was abandoned, when the answer clearly was that wasn't sufficient capacity. Boris Johnson kind of tried to avoid saying that and end up giving a rather waffly answer that Matthew Paris mercilessly pilloried in his Times column on Saturday. And today it is this question of care homes, where I think it would have been more sensible to have admitted that the advice with the hindsight was wrong.
So, Katie, we're moving to a different stage of the COVID debate here. Rather than saying it's not clear what's happening, it is pretty clear that this virus is one that has claimed the lives of the elderly. The average age of somebody who died from COVID in Britain is 80, and care homes are racking up thousands of deaths. So is it time for the government simply to put its hands up and admit what is fairly obvious, that it got this one badly wrong?
Yeah, I think a bit of contrition here wouldn't go amiss. But I also think on care homes specifically, it does seem the area where ministers are tend at least to be the most ready to admit they did get something wrong. So you often hear, as we heard yet again at PMQs today, put forward the fact that the NHS was not overwhelmed. It is definitely the case that those in cabinet see one of their big achievements of the past couple of months, the fact that the NHS was not overwhelmed like certain other healthcare systems were. Boris Johnson said today everyone got a ventilator who needed one. But on care homes, there was not that sense of, we compare well. And actually, last week, Boris Johnson did say he bitterly regrets the coronavirus crisis in care homes, which is why I think today's performance is a little bit strange, because he's already seemed to suggest this scenario where his government might become much more apologetic. And instead, we have a scenario where it seems as though Boris Johnson did get the facts wrong and there could be a correction to the House, perhaps not him in person, but it just adds to this sense that this is a government that isn't prepared to say when it gets things wrong. So I do think even if though it didn't happen today, I do think on care homes, it is one where ministers do think that there is some blame that can be apportioned to them.
Now, James, we're also seeing Keir Starmer's style here. He is a lawyer, a pretty good one, a former director of public prosecutions. He seems to be identifying the government's weakest spot and going after it. It doesn't seem as if the Prime Minister has yet found a way of getting out of the traps that Keir Starmer lays for him.
Yes, Keir Starmer's strategy essentially is to put Boris Johnson in the dock at PMQs every week. You know, confront him with government documents and ask him about discrepancies or changes. And I think one of the problems for Boris Johnson is this kind of hybrid parliament with very few MPs in the chamber. Even watching on television, you can see how often Boris Johnson looks around to his own benches. Because normally one of a Prime Minister's great advantages at PMQs is that he has numbers on his side. And this might not be particularly edifying, but the government benches can effectively shout down the Leader of the Opposition. And they can change the mood of a session by essentially offering huge vocal support to the Prime Minister, which make his answers sound better than they are, can throw the Leader of the Opposition off his tracks. Boris Johnson is having to do this in what is far more like a very quiet courtroom than the normal cockpit of a nation with all the bustling and noise that we are used to in the Commons Chamber. And I think Keir Starmer is taking a lot of advantage of this just to kind of rattle through. And he also is his whole approach is to take the government on its own terms. So the government has withdrawn the international deaths comparison chart. And Keir Starmer's like, well, you can't say that making international comparisons isn't useful because you yourself, your government, was making them for 7 weeks. It is an effective tactic like that. I did think the one thing that where I thought Boris Johnson's answer was most heartfelt was when Keir Starmer said that you're stopping learning from other countries. And I thought you saw in Boris Johnson's answer something very revealing. He said, no, we're watching what is happening to the R in those countries that are loosening restrictions very closely. And they clearly are. I think the kind of pace at which the lockdown is eased in this country will depend hugely on what happens in those European countries that have begun to ease up restrictions. I think that with so much uncertainty about the virus, the government is almost regarding that as one of its best sources of kind of forward guidance on how it should proceed.
Right, but the funny thing is that Britain might be obsessed with the R number in Germany, but the Germans don't seem to be. They were asked about it yesterday, and the Robert Koch Institute said that if the R gets to be 1.2, 1.3 for quite a while, they might start to think about something. But it seems strange, Katie, that the British government is looking abroad for examples of countries coming out too fast out of lockdown rather than not fast enough, which does underline the impression that we are going to be the last out of the traps on this.
Yes, but I think it goes back to the sense that mistakes have been made in the initial response, and they think that people will come to forgive them for that in that stage. But were the UK to move too quickly out of it, it would be a risk that, you know, you cannot take and expect people to go with it this time. And I think that if you speak to figures in government, they're so conscious of where public opinion currently is on this. Now, if you look at various polls of, you know, if you ask people, and obviously it's all a little bit down to how you phrase the question, but, you know, health or the economy. Now, it's clearly not as simple a choice as health versus the economy. But when you ask people that question, the Brits, I think on several surveys now, come up as the highest number to say health, much higher than the Swedes, for example. And I think there is a concern that even if Boris Johnson thought we should move out of lockdown quicker, there is a sense that it makes no political sense to try and do that when public opinion right now is so behind the lockdown continuing and sees even mild changes potentially as too fast. So I think that although everything is focused on the R number right now, I do think that if there was a big shift in public opinion on lockdown, that might change the government's perspective. But right now, they think they are dealing with a country that is very reluctant to move out of lockdown and very scared about doing that.
But James, isn't this argument a bit circular? And public opinion so far seems to have moved lockstep behind whatever the Prime Minister said when he was defying lockdown. People were with him. He said go into lockdown, people back him. 58% say the government are doing well right now. So Surely public opinion is there to be moulded. And perhaps one of the things that's going to mould it is the front page of a Telegraph today, a leaked report saying that the deficit this year could be £516 billion. That's more than 10 times the deficit imagined as recently as March. If the lockdown continues, and this worst case scenario is something that won't just affect the economy, it will affect society, it will affect jobs, it would be absolutely devastating were it to come to pass.
Yeah, I think as Charles Moore has argued, that Boris Johnson has played such a key role in forming public opinion on the virus, you know, the government stay at home message, that the government then can't say, oh, we're just going to wait for public opinion to change, because the public opinion has in large part, this public sentiment has in large part been fostered by the government. I think the economic question is fascinating, because so much of it depends on what kind of recovery we are going to get. If we are going to get something approaching a V, there is an argument for saying that this is simply a one-off hit to the public finances, and this country should just learn to live with a higher national debt. And the kind of essentially the new fiscal rule should be that growth must exceed the deficit every year, and that that would be a way of bringing the national debt down over time. Obviously, though, things become very different if you start looking at a U or an L-shaped recovery. I must admit, though, I am, given that Boris Johnson has said that the UK government isn't going to do austerity, the A word, as he called it, rather derogatorily the other day, the question then becomes, is it sensible to load tax rises onto an economy that is trying to recover from coronavirus? And I've been quite struck talking to Tory MPs who you would put at the fiscally hawkish end of a spectrum, how they are learning to love a higher, or learning to, sorry, not love is an exaggeration, learning to live with a higher national debt, because they think that given that Boris Johnson isn't going to go for spending cuts, they think that tax rises will be damaging to the economy, and so they would rather, their least worst option is simply to accept this higher level of national debt.
So, Katie, this seems to be a magic money tree then. The Tories want to spend money, they don't want to raise taxes, they don't want to cut spending, they just want to borrow some more. Is this the new orthodoxy? Are the Tories now simply the party of mammoth debt?
Well, I think if we're going to ask who would have spent more money, Jeremy Corbyn or Boris Johnson, we may be getting beyond Jeremy Corbyn levels of spending, but it is because we have a global pandemic rather than, you know, an average day. But I think ultimately the Tories find themselves in a situation where, in part because how they ran the most recent election, partly Boris Johnson's political instincts, and also their, what they see as their new target voter, they're just in a place where it is viewed as politically impossible and politically toxic to return to mass cuts and austerity. So I do think we're heading to a new type of Tory party where fiscal hawks are probably going to feel quite out of place. But it is interesting in this leaked Treasury report in the Telegraph today, because it makes the point that in order to encourage the markets to have faith in Britain, they may have to take a few steps to suggest they're getting this under control rather than just simply borrow. So you might see some things such as, you know, rises in taxes and potentially things the Tories don't even want to do just because they have to out of necessity.
And Katie, do you think that report was almost written to get number 10's attention on this? It's in such crisis, if you write a report, you know there's a reasonable chance of it becoming public. Everybody's trying to do things with an eye to the coming inquiry. When I saw the Telegraph report, I thought to myself, I wonder if the Treasury thinks number 10 isn't taking the debt seriously enough and wants to do something to grab Boris Johnson's attention.
Well, I wouldn't want to speculate as to the source, but I definitely think it is the case that if you look at even the circumstances surrounding Sajid Javid's exit from Number 10, there has been a sense amongst some in the Tory party that Number 10 just do not worry about spending in the way that you might expect Conservative politicians or a Conservative Downing Street to. And if you look at Rishi Sunak's decision to extend the furlough scheme, estimated at 80 billion. Ultimately, I think there is a worry that you do have to put the lid on at some point, so it could well be a warning shot.
Katie and James, thanks very much indeed. You can subscribe to this podcast, Coffee House Shots, on the iTunes store and to the magazine itself from just £1 a week on spectator.co.uk/subscribe. Thanks for listening, and thanks to our editor, Cindy Yu.
Thanks for listening to Coffee House Shots. I'm Kate Andrews, and I curate The Spectator's daily lunchtime coronavirus update. For the latest research, world news, and lockdown updates related to COVID-19, sign up for free at spectator.co.uk/COVID email.